Yeah, I think that's the real key to having good speech is thinking before we speak. Yeah?
Yeah.
And really checking our motivation. And it's very helpful in this regard. And this is why I really emphasize again and again in the evening, sit down and think about what you said and felt and thought and did during the day. And then you begin to notice patterns coming up. You know, specifically patterns of really sloppy speech or harmful speech. And as soon as you start noticing those patterns, it makes it much easier to stop them because you know the kinds of situations that you're likely to do it in. And when you get that kind of situation or you get that kind of feeling in your mind, you know, it's easier to identify if you've been able to recognize it a lot in the past. Yeah. And so identifying it is the first step. Then keeping our mouth shut is another step. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's saying that when we, you know, take precepts, then of course we have to confront the whole issue of what happens if we break them and what do we do if we break them. And I must say that the reason we take precepts is because we can't keep them purely. If you could keep them purely, what you don't need to take them, okay? But it does mean that to take the precepts, you have to have some reasonable confidence that, first of all, you want to keep it and you want to keep it well. And you're going to put some effort into it. So it's not just totally sloppy either. Oh, yeah, I'll take that, but, you know, I don't have to keep it. You know, you think this is something I want to do and I have some confidence I can do, but I don't expect myself to do it 100% perfectly because if I could, I wouldn't need it. Okay? So going into it with that kind of attitude, then we are fully aware that sometimes we're going to transgress. So what do we do then? Well, our usual pattern when we transgress is that we then, you know, I'm guilty, I'm bad, I'm horrible, how could I do this? I don't want anybody to know because then they'll know what an idiot I am, blah, 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 blah. You know, we have this whole tape. Yeah, I don't know which number it is to order from Polly, but, you know, I think we already have this one already. The Dharma tapes we don't get, but this one we have. What we do instead, you know, instead of playing that tape, is we develop a sense of regret for what we've done, which is a wisdom mind recognizing our mistake. Okay, not beating ourselves up emotionally about it, but recognizing it, not rationalizing it. Then restoring the relationship somehow, so by taking refuge in the holy objects or generating altruism towards other sentient beings, making some kind of determination not to repeat it again, according to what we're capable of, and then doing some remedial behavior, generally some kind of purification practice or community service, some kind of positive action instead. Yeah? And so that's why I really encourage you in the evening, look over the day, you know, rejoice in what went well, in the good karma we created, go through the four opponent powers for the things that we messed up on. And that makes a really nice way to complete the day and to evaluate the day and go on. And if we do that, we really begin to notice patterns and we begin to also take some active steps to counteract those patterns.
I noticed the 7 limbs have a very specific order, and is this second one really beneficial to reflect on what you've done wrong first and then rejoice second?
Is there a psychological benefit of doing the...
That's the order in the
7 limbs. There must be a reason for it. It might be, you know, that maybe in order to allow ourselves to see the good things, we first have to clean up the mess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it could be that, you know, we clean up the mess through doing the confession first, and then we can see the other positive virtues better. Sometimes I think with Westerners, it's sometimes skillful to do it the other way. Because, and also maybe a reason for doing the confession first before the rejoicing is because if you rejoice but you don't do it properly, you could become proud. Whereas if you've done the confession first, you've looked at your garbage, and so becoming proud isn't so much a danger. But I think sometimes in the West, you know, we neglect the rejoicing part. As you know, I mean, it's really funny. We go to the extreme of getting very proud and arrogant, and the extreme of also totally putting ourselves down. So I think we somehow have to learn to realize our mistakes, but also rejoice in our good qualities and not neglect either of them. Mm-hmm. The relationship between pride and shame. Well, sometimes we're very ashamed, and so to cover it up, we put on a big show and we're being very proud. Yeah. Yeah, they very much correspond. Some of the people I know who, maybe I shouldn't say some of the people I know. Some people, who are very proud, the whole reason for the pride is because they don't like themselves very much. Yeah. And I think that's always helpful to remember, because sometimes when we're around people who are very proud, we get jealous. To remember that that's really, you know, what need is there to get jealous of somebody else's good qualities? Because if they have those good qualities, fine, somebody might as well have them. And if the person is just blowing themselves up out of all proportion, we don't need to get jealous because what they're doing is inaccurate and it's rather indicative of their own internal pain.
Uh-huh. What about the relationships?
Okay. Some teachers say you only take refuge once. My teachers used to let people take refuge several times, so I kind of do it that way. When you take the person who does the refuge ceremony becomes one of your spiritual teachers. So I think it's wise to also reflect upon that, you know, and then one has the option to take refuge with that person doing the ceremony or not. But we have to remember we're taking refuge in the Buddha Dharma Sangha, not in that person. Yeah. So it's not I took refuge in so-and-so. I took refuge in the Buddha Dharma Sangha. Yeah. Okay. That person became one of my spiritual teachers because they did that ceremony. Because they provided the link with this whole lineage. Uh-huh. So, right, it happens many times. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, in that way, that's allowed, but taking the refuge ceremony is an isolated ceremony. Some people say only necessary once, but usually do it twice. However, Lama said in terms of taking precepts that you don't, once you have the five lay precepts, you don't need to keep taking them again and again and again, unless you've broken them from the root. Once you have the precepts. Okay. For killing. Okay. Now, each of the precepts has to have an object, and you recognize that object and a motivation, and then the actual doing the thing, and then a completion of the action. So for killing, it involves killing a human being. So this is an intentional killing of a human being where the other person dies before you do. It's not getting in a car accident. That's there. There's no intention. Okay? Human beings, to break it from the root, That doesn't mean it's okay to kill animals. Okay, then for the one of stealing, it's to steal things, you know, that you know don't belong to you, things that are of value, that in the society, you know, you could be penalized for taking. Okay, the sexual, a more sexual behavior one, it's, you know, going outside of one's relationship or going with somebody who's in a relationship. Again, knowing that they're in a relationship, knowing the whole thing, knowing what you're doing, okay, and then having the pleasure at the end. With the lying one, it's lying about one's spiritual attainments, you know, saying, I'm a bodhisattva, or I've realized emptiness, or I've attained da-da-da-da-da, when you haven't. And with the intoxicants, the intoxicant one I give very strictly. Yeah. Anything. Yeah. I mean, the Buddha said one drop of alcohol. Now, some teachers say, and I think they do this for Westerners, is they say it means getting out of control with the intoxicants. So one glass of wine is okay. But that's not the way I do it. Because I figure you don't get drunk if you don't take one glass. You know, it's kind of like, yeah. So I think it's much easier to make it very clear.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I've been in that situation, and I've learned to ask beforehand or spit it out. I think if you know this has liqueur in it and you eat it, if you don't know, you have no intention. Yeah. But I still think it's wise to spit it out.
What's that?
Well, technically speaking, the alcohol's evaporated. But again, personally speaking, the way I keep that is no spaghetti sauce with wine, even the alcohol, even if it's been cooked 10 hours. Because for me, I think it's just much better to be real clear about this. Yeah. It's interesting, you know. The one of taking alcohol, there are some actions that are naturally negative, and then there are others that are prohibited because the Buddha said so. The Buddha made a vow. Something like killing or stealing is naturally negative. Whether you have a precept or not, if you kill or steal, you create negative karma by that action. Okay? Taking alcohol itself is not a naturally negative action. It is negative because if you've taken the precept, you know, then you've made it into a negative action for you. The reason the Buddha made that precept and encouraged us to avoid intoxicants is because if you get intoxicated, then you're quite likely to break all the other precepts. Okay? But the alcohol in and of itself isn't the negative thing. It's what you do when you're drunk or when you're doped up. That's the thing. That's the real harmful stuff. Yeah? Yeah, I mean, it means that you know the object, okay? Like, here's Joe Blow, yeah? I want to kill Joe Blow. This is Joe Blow, okay? I have the motivation to kill him. It's not an accident. You do it. He dies, and you're glad about it. Yeah? Okay? Yeah. If you know, like some people kill people, and they really don't want to, you know, like maybe you're at war, yeah, you're a soldier sent out there, and that kind of situation, it's not the same karma. I mean, you are killing, but it's not the same karma as if you volunteered, yippee, I'm going to go out and do it. you know, kind of doing it, even though you regret doing it, is quite different. Yeah. Now, in terms of the precept, I think, I know in terms of our monks and nuns vows, I think if, like, when you're doing it, you have a mind of regret, and you don't have one single moment of wishing to conceal it, then it's not a complete transgression. But if your regret comes sometime afterwards, you know, and you've kind of did it and you felt happy about it, and you didn't intend to conceal it, you know, and then after the next day the regret comes, it's still broken. Yeah.
Yeah.
Technically speaking, to have a complete action of killing, it involves killing another human being. And it involves that person dying before you do. Now, in suicide, those two factors are missing. But, you know, I think it still is quite negative karmically.